time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Final Friday in May, the 29th. Welcome to the roundtable. Joining us, Manager of Communications for Toronto Police, Megan Gray. Hello, Megan.
Hi there. Did you just say last weekend in May? My goodness.
Yeah. I know, right?
It is.
That took me completely, just knocked me right off.
By my count, this is the 19th Friday in May.
Oh my God.
For those of you keeping score at home.
They just keep
partnered
going.
Upstream Strategy, that's Chris Chafin. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Let's start off with a conversation we had yesterday. We've been following this story quite a bit. Toronto's Police Chief Mark Saunders saying he could say more to fill the vacuum of uncertainty surrounding the death of a woman who fell from an apartment building balcony near High Park on Wednesday night, but he can't. The SIU, of course, is now taking over this investigation and has been since the very beginning when this incident happened on Wednesday evening. But he did tell reporters that officers received three separate 911 calls about the incident and that two of them mentioned assaults involving knives, prompting a heightened or priority one response. Here's the chief.
In a case like this, when we're talking about assaults occurring and knives being present and being used, frontline police officers have to go to those calls. They have to restore calm, investigate, and then proceed in accordance to law with what they need to do.
You also had the lawyer for the family speak out today outside of police headquarters, where he was basically talking about some of the allegations that had been made early on in this case and basically saying, well, no, you know, that was the impression at that point. That's no longer what the impression is now when it comes to Toronto Police, perhaps, and again, this was the allegation out there of throwing this woman off of a balcony. That was walked back today by the family's lawyer. Megan, obviously this is your beat and this is your bag. This is a very tricky thing for Toronto Police because at least my opinion, your hands are sort of tied as to what you can say and what you can't say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that is put in place so the SIU can conduct an independent, thorough investigation. That's their responsibility. But you're right, it does put pressure on us to not say anything that could potentially compromise that investigation. I think the chief, he's gone out 2 days in a row now, has been very good about only releasing what details he can about the incident before anything took place that required the SIU to invoke their mandate. And we've been trying to be as clear as we can about asking for some patience and making sure that facts are out there before people rush to judgment, appreciating that we're all in a place right now where there's events happening across the United States and perhaps historical events that have happened here in Toronto that are raising the temperature for everybody.
Yeah, Chris, and I think the family's lawyer actually deserves some credit here for coming out and making that clarification. And just hear me out as to why. You've got a protest that is scheduled for tomorrow. Megan mentions what's going on down in the United States. It would be wrong-headed to send a bunch of protesters, and the family's not the ones running the protest. It's a grassroots movement, but at least they're going to have the information there that the family is taking that statement and putting on the back burner, saying, no, that's not what we believe at this point in time. Still making case, but perhaps not inflaming the situation any worse.
Yeah, from a communication standpoint, it's a big change in the messaging that's out there about what happened with this incident, and that was without a shadow of doubt in the limelight of what was taking place down in Minnesota. It was, the thought that it could happen here in Toronto is something similar with the same time frame. Both being African Americans, I think the outrage was appropriate at first, but I'm glad to see the lawyer walk this back today, because I think it is, it's such a significant walk back to the original message. My greatest concern was, I truly hope that message is disseminated into the people who are showing up at the protests. And really do look at this thoughtfully, because our police are under an incredible amount of pressure to do their job and do their job properly and safely. And it's personally why I'm a big fan of the concept of all police officers wearing body cams, because it just eliminates that option for doubt out of it in these scenarios. But I think, like you said, it was a big, significant move for the lawyer to come out. And I think, frankly, rather courageous, because he's under a certain amount of pressure to protect the family.
One of the things when we saw Nia Sinh come out today to speak to media, Megan, that I'm just curious about as someone that's not an insider with all of this, he came out to speak. There was only Steve Ryan there, who's a former police officer and a CP24 crime specialist. Is it unusual for lawyers to just decide to have a press conference like on the spur of the moment? And is, you know, anybody that's involved in a criminal case or any type of case, are they just allowed to have a press conference in front of police headquarters? Like, what's the protocol for something like that? I'm curious.
Well, I don't know how the, you know, news conference with Mr. Sinh, either the first time or the second time, unfolded. That was, I presume, arrangements that he made. But that did happen outside of headquarters. So certainly, you know, it's not the first time that somebody has held a news conference or made comments to media, even about the Toronto Police Service, outside of our own building. So I'd have to defer to him as to whether or not, you know, those arrangements were made beforehand, but if they're outside of our building, then as I said, it's happened before, and I imagine it will happen again.
Yeah, and you know, I'll just add to that, a lot of these things can be impromptu, right? You know that somebody's inside police headquarters for whatever business they have in there. A reporter might be, you know, tipped off to that kind of thing, and then next thing you know, they're asking those type of questions. Let's move on to what we were talking about down in the United States of America. We now found out today, I think, some interesting information when it comes to the officer that was involved in the death of this man in Minneapolis. Listen to this.
The officer who has been identified as Derek Chauvin, in the death of Mr. Lloyd, has been taken into custody by the BCA. We will be giving out further information when we have it. At this point, we do not have any further information on charging decisions that will be coming from the county attorney, but we did want to let you know that he is in custody. The BCA did make an arrest today.
That fired police officer has been charged now with third-degree murder and manslaughter in the death of George Floyd. Of course, Chauvin is the former police officer who was captured on video pressing his knee into George Floyd's neck on Monday repeatedly, as Floyd said repeatedly over and over, "I can't breathe." And of course, Chris, we've had a number of riots and protests down in the United States of America. Will this set of charges, and you know, these are swift, they don't typically happen this fast, especially in scenarios like this, will this perhaps put some water on a burning ember?
I think it's a good start. I think the speed in which they decided to charge this officer with, in comparison to similar incidents over the last 5-10 years in the United States especially, I think will go a long way. And I think, frankly, with the exclusion of, you know, the gentleman that sits in the Oval Office in Washington, I think there's been an interesting across the board, across the political spectrum response to this, that this was the right thing to do. And I think that is what I look at as the greater shift in terms of putting, you know, some water on this flame, that if for once, frankly and bluntly, as a conservative, Republicans are standing up against this, and you're seeing it. I think Andrew Scheer spoke out about it today as well here in Canada about, you know, Lloyd. I think that has a greater impact in the long term than anything else, because unfortunately, I think racial issues had become far too much of a left versus right issue in America, you know, much as a result, I think, of the current president. But I think that's what I'm optimistic to see.
Megan?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with everything Chris just said. I think that you know, it is a good step in the right direction, but I think it's only the beginning. And I think that, you know, to that point, we do have to keep having these conversations. We can't just let the charges or the protests become the distraction for what needs to be continually a conversation that's had by everyone, and can't lose focus on what happened to you know, to Mr. Floyd. It's a very difficult thing to talk about. It's a very difficult video to watch, and those mm-hmm. conversations need to keep happening. They can't stop just because that officer's been charged.
One thing I was, you know, thankful for today, after watching so much coverage last night and then getting up today and finding out the crowds had not only got to that police station, but it had got inside and set fire to it. CNN crew that was arrested, tear gas, you know, all of the measures that were being used by police, National Guard being called in. Frankly, I was surprised that more people weren't hurt last night. I was surprised that there was restraint and that people weren't killed in those demonstrations last night. I mean, if you're going to take something away that's even the least little bit of positive, maybe this is going to de-escalate what we've seen over the last few nights.
Let's turn it a little bit more locally. Doug Ford, the premier today, said he's warming up to the idea of regional reopenings, meaning areas that have not been impacted as severely by COVID-19. So places outside of the GTHA would perhaps get a chance to open up. Businesses would get a chance to open up. Obviously, everything would be socially distanced. Chris, do you like this, or do you see perhaps people taking advantage of it? You know, if you're from Toronto, maybe going on a bit of a road trip to an area that's not impacted.
No, I'm a big fan of this. I think I'm glad the premier listened to some of the advice he was getting and reconsidered the approach. I spent a lot of time in political campaigns out in rural Ontario, and I can tell you at the best of times, there are large swaths of this province that no city slicker like me is going to go visit, even if they can, just to get out of the city. It's just, we have a gigantic province, a lot of small towns, a lot of small businesses in those small towns that, haven't been impacted nearly the same as the Toronto area has. So I'm a big fan of this decision. I think it, like everything else, it'll be done cautiously, but I think it's the right approach if we look at, provinces, smaller provinces, more rural provinces that have reopened a little quicker than Ontario because, like parts of rural Ontario, they've been less impacted. I think we should treat it like that. And I think we can have faith in fellow Ontarians to do the right thing and not, hop in their car and drive out to the middle of nowhere just because they can.
If I may, I'll just put on my Ryan Doyle voice. I have no faith in fellow Ontarians.
No, none.
Is that about right?
Whatsoever.
Is that about right?
Yeah. Okay. Billy Crystal over here, the city slicker. What's he talking about?
Yeah, I think this is definitely a reasonable approach to take. I mean, I know we had this conversation, a month ago, a few weeks ago. Time's all blurring together. But when some of the other provinces were starting to open before Ontario was, I think this is a reasonable approach to take. There are towns in this province that are probably in a better position to start opening up than Toronto is. And I think that we need to create those plans that work for each of those areas. I, too, agree. As a city slicker, I'm probably not going to start driving 5 hours north just because there's a bar open. But, notwithstanding Trinity Bellwoods last weekend, I think people are going to make the right decision.
All right. Megan, Chris, you can catch both of them in the Legends of Curly's Gold 2, which will be hitting on demand everywhere quite soon. Thank you, both of you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.